ultimately, I mean, I had to find a peer who we became each other's cheerleaders. And mine happened to be that of sales ops. She and I work really well together. We had a mutual understanding and respect for the other person's area of expertise.
Welcome to the OpStars podcast, where we talk to revenue operations pros at the top of their game so that we can collectively support each other through the sharing of ideas, learning best practices, and discovering innovative new strategies. I'm your host, Don Offos.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the OpStars podcast. Today, I have Chloe Pott. Chloe is most recently marketing operations at a company called Localize. What does Localize do?
Localize is a translation management solution that helps companies automate their localization processes for digital content. So websites and apps and web content.
Got it. And you're actually located in France, correct?
In Toulouse, France. Yes, I am.
Very beautiful area. Airbus is based there, right? But all the A380s come out of
it
Toulouse,
is.
Right?
They are.
One of the things we always talk about in the podcast is how our career journeys are very rarely, you know, I'm coming out of college and I want to go into RevOps. And your background, of course, you are in France and your major was psychology in French, correct?
Yes.
So how did you go from graduating with a degree in psychology in French and then here you are today leading marketing operations at a startup?
I wouldn't put it far beyond some university to now have like a degree in revenue operations. I bet that exists out there.
I think that would be amazing. I haven't seen it. That'd be something definitely to check out.
Like many of my peers who are in the revenue operations and marketing operations, I kind of fell into it. So I studied psychology and French. My first job out of college was like a strategic marketing intern at a B2B French SaaS company. And this was 15 years ago, and we were doing an event and we emailed people like using blind carbon copy in your email and your Outlook. And then someone came around like asking for a volunteer to demo a marketing automation tool called Eloqua. And I was like, hey, I want to know what that is. And so I kind of just like fell into it and started learning by doing. And 15 years later, here I am. I've dabbled in Eloqua, HubSpot, Marketo, Autopilot, I mean, Salesforce, all the different tools. And I can't even tell you how many. I mean, we all know Scott Brinker's evolution of MarTech stack. Like, I can't even tell you how many tools are out there now. A handful of them. Yeah, so I kind of just fell into it and learn as I do.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you picked up on Eloqua, you were shifting from a point where you were BCCing everyone on an invite or on emails. I can remember doing that, you know, way back when. What were some of the challenges that you faced when you stepped into that marketing ops role and there was no automation and you were looking at Eloqua? How did you first prioritize what you did there?
One of the biggest challenges that I recall is that it was easy to do things just like BCCing everyone on an email. The hard part was then like managing all the responses and who was going to attend and whatnot. But transitioning to a real marketing automation solution, you really had to think three steps ahead of what you were doing. Before marketing automation solutions existed, you want to send an email to people, you just send an email. You don't really need to figure out what you're going to do after that email. But in roles in marketing automation solutions, and you really have to think about what you're going to do before you even know what you're going to do so that you can set things up properly. And so that was a change in mindset shifting that had to happen when starting to use marketing automation tools. Whether that be Eloqua, HubSpot, Marketo, any of them, you really have to think to what you're trying to optimize for. So trying to think about what it is before you even know what it is.
Yeah, because really when it comes to marketing platforms, there's really streams of emails over time rather than just firing them off and hoping for the best. You might want to have some kind of cadence behind what you're sending, who you're sending it to, why you're sending it at a specific time. Is it tied to a campaign? There's so many different components to how that works. I mean, I think that's really why marketing platforms are so popular today. It is because of being able to model that and then track the results. It becomes really, really important. I know you've worked with pretty much all of the different platforms. You rattled them all off. So when you first implemented Marketo, that was really a significant milestone at the time for the team you were with. What were some of the key factors that led you to picking that one over others when you have so much experience with all of them that are out there. You had Salesforce, right? So Salesforce had a platform, but you went with Marketo. I guess a lot of times when people are looking at these platforms, they're trying to figure out like, hey, what do I need to think about? You know, what is best in class? What was the thinking that went into that?
All tools predominantly do the same thing. There are some like major differentiators between the big three these days. And I think piece of recommendation for anyone in this situation is, it's not about what I think is the best tool. I mean, I had a personal preference for Marketo because that's what I'd been using for the past 10 years. But it was also like, what does the team and what does the organization actually need in terms of business and to grow? Is it B2B? Is it B2C? What type of sales are they running? Is it enterprise sales? Is it product-led sales? And depending on what these answers are, will automatically like guide you to picking the best solution for the team. So at the time, a couple of years ago, when we implemented Marketo, we had multiple tools for emailing. We had a tool for emailing prospects. We had a tool for emailing customers. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to centralize all of our email communications into one tool. And at the time, we were very like sales-led motion. So we didn't really need to bring in any of the product data at the time. And so it came down to HubSpot and Marketo. And there were some things that I knew the organization wanted to do, like really granular lead scoring and landing pages and global forms. And there are just some things that at the time, one tool wasn't able to do and the other one was. But now I'm seeing this change in the landscape, not just at Localize, but at a lot of other tech SaaS companies, is they're relying more on product data to run their marketing campaigns. And so now if you would ask me what tool would I select, it probably wouldn't be Marketo, because Marketo isn't able to pull in the product data. And so there are other tools out there that we're actually looking into to help us modify and amplify our marketing efforts based on actually on what the users are doing within the product.
Like product-led marketing.
Exactly. It's not just product-led sales, but it's product-led marketing, product-led growth. And it makes entirely much more sense, I think, to market the product based on what your user is doing.
Yeah. So one of the things that's always fascinated me about marketing platforms and emailing, you had mentioned that, you know, when you looked at Marketo, you stepped into something where there was basically an email platform for everything. There was just so many different things and you wanted to get everybody consolidated. I mean, do you think in today's RevOps world, like I see that there's marketing platforms like Marketo, like Eloqua, Marketing Cloud, but then there's also sales engagement. So you have the sales lofts of the world, the outreaches of the world. That's an email platform that's really centered for sales. Taking a step farther, and there's even email platforms for CSMs like a Gainsight. Do you see a world where there could be one company that can bring everything together in the right way and just have a single emailing platform across all teams in a very authentic way?
That would have to be a beast of an organization. There would be so many specifics. Like, there are specific things that marketers need in their emailing tool. There are specific things that sales engagement tools need. Like, I've been seeing more sales engagement tools bringing in the intent when prospects change jobs. There's that intent that comes in. Customer success tools, they're based more on product usage. Marketing is based more on demand gen and lead gen. So I think it'd be really cool if there were one tool to do it all. But I don't know if it's possible because there's so many specific technological features that each department within the organization would need. I mean, we're all about consolidating, but can we consolidate it that much? I don't know.
Yeah. Something to think about. Something to watch for, I guess, right? So one of the things we talk about in the podcast, when we go into our organization as a RevOps professional, we go into one of two different things. We either step into a situation where we are the first ones on the ground, we're the first hire, and we get to build everything from scratch. It's a very much a unicorn situation. It's great to be able to do that, right? But the rest of them are becoming what I call a digital janitor. Like, you step into it, it's already a mess, and you're just going in there, and your first few months is really just cleaning things up. And I know that when we talked before, you had mentioned you had been the past from just being in a survival mode to really getting into the weeds of fixing marketing operations. Can you share like insights on how you approached modernizing the marketing tech stack to make sure that everything was integrated right?
Moving from survival mode to running, it's a challenge, but it's also a lot of fun because you can get a lot of people involved and you can enable and see so many people grow in their own journeys. So not only at Localize, but at other organizations that I've been in the past as well, when you're the first one to come in and you build things, or you're fixing dumpster fires and putting out dumpster fires, my number one tip is not doing it on your own, including others for the purposes of enablement, so that you're not the only person who is firefighting or in survival mode. You are spreading out the weight and enabling others to learn how to essentially work yourself out of your own job.
Asking for help, right?
Yeah. You can't optimize and grow if you're only firefighting. So any team that I join, I'm all about bringing other marketers, demand gen, content writers, product marketers into the realm of operations so that they understand what's being built for them so that they can actually build on their own. And that's the glory of the tools that we have access to today that allow you to templatize and like make programs so that less advanced marketers aren't starting from scratch every time. They can build from a template and then they send it over to the more advanced marketing ops folks to QA and launch it. But if you're doing it all on your own, you can't optimize and modernize and integrate.
It gives someone who's new in the role kind of a foundation to work with.
Yeah.
I know that the economy hasn't been fantastic. And I know that a lot of folks have downsized. They're looking to consolidate, giving economic constraints. You know, you've run into that where you've had a downsized team. How did you manage to maintain efficiency in your marketing operations function? And, you know, what strategies did you use to cope with having less people to work with?
You really have to determine what the priorities are. And so when we had to downsize our marketing ops team, we redid our OKRs and we realigned our expectations with sales management and marketing management and product management, saying, okay, here's what we had originally planned. Here's what's feasible now with our smaller team. If it's not possible to change OKRs, because it might not always be, then shifting responsibilities a bit. So going back to that enablement point, we moved from a centralized to a decentralized campaign model when we downsized our team. So originally, all the marketers were submitting all of their campaign requests to me and my team. We would build it all and send it out. Well, when we had to restructure, we actually put that ownership of building onto the marketers because we had fewer marketing ops experts. So we relied very heavily on programs and templates and form submissions for people to submit things to us to structure them so that our content writers not only were writing content, but they would also be setting up their own webinar program. That way, less of the hands-on keyboard work was being done by my team. That onus was put back on essentially the campaign owner so that we had more time. And so we were able to change our OKRs a bit, and we also shifted responsibilities and brought others more into the operations process so that it was just more evenly balanced and that we would have time to do everything that we needed to do.
You made sure that the downsizing of the team didn't cause particular people to get overwhelmed, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't just a shift in what marketing operations did, but also in every sub-team within marketing.
Yeah. And then on the Marketo side, you've dealt with the challenge of ensuring that, you know, when a lead enters the top of the funnel, it does all the things, right? Having a lead is great, but you really want it enriched. You want it scored. You want it assigned to the right person. You want it followed up at the right time. What is the lifecycle model that you had built in Marketo to address this? Because I know Marketo has a really good way of doing lifecycle modeling. And why did you choose to move from kind of a simultaneous more over to a sequential process?
Yeah. So we have a global sales organization and a global marketing team. So we have inbound leads coming in 24 hours a day. And we always have someone awake, ready to follow up. The downside of all technology is there are hiccups in the system and there's a latency between the system syncs. So originally, we had leads enter our database. They would get partially enriched. They would sync to Salesforce. They would get assigned to a sales rep. And then the enrichment would finish and then would re-update the record in Salesforce. And then because the data had changed, it would reassign it to a different sales rep.
Oh, wow.
So you can see exactly why we changed to a sequential process, because leads were getting assigned prematurely based on what the final data was. So that's the native sync. And we set it up in a way that everything had to happen in the sequential order in Marketo first. So we verified email addresses, then we sent it to enrichment, then we did the scoring, and then we pushed to Salesforce. And as we pushed it to Salesforce, there were a few processes that we could run asynchronously, like preference management. So by the time it actually hits Salesforce, it kind of goes through a conveyor belt in Marketo. By the time it hits Salesforce, it's a pretty little package with a pretty bow, and it gets assigned to the right rep. And so that rep knows if it actually gets assigned to me now, it's final. It's not going to be ping-ponged to someone else in the team. And they have all the data that they need to do their proper qualification. So if it comes in as pre-MQL, they know that it's not quite an MQL. But if it comes in as an MQL, it has really shown intent and it's ready to be followed up with immediately.
So it improved the quality of the lead at the sacrifice of some speed, right? Because obviously you're having to wait for all those syncs to happen.
Surprisingly, it's not that long. It's less than like 90 seconds.
Okay. So it's a sacrifice worth making.
It's a sacrifice worth making. The one sacrifice that we did make is that it did decrease the number of MQLs that were being assigned to sales, because we changed our lead scoring to modify intent behavior so that just because they downloaded an ebook doesn't actually mean that they're an MQL. However, if they're in within our ICP, we wanted that to be higher value than downloading an ebook if they're not in our ICP. So even if they did not download anything, but they are an ICP, then we would push it forward. So there were fewer MQLs, but the quality is better for our sales team.
Right. You had a cumulative scoring model so that what you were sending over was actually good things, and you didn't have salespeople going, oh, it's just another MQL from marketing, and then ignoring it. They knew that if they got an MQL, it was the real deal and it was worth following up on.
Exactly. So there are some sacrifices here and there, but it's all well worth it in the end.
Yeah, I would say so. Because, I mean, yeah, speed to lead is always a big deal, but 90 seconds versus instantaneous probably is not going to make enough of a difference than the sacrifices you would have of like sales not trusting what marketing's doing, right?
And it came down to like existing customers who were interacting on our website, and existing customers were getting assigned to SDRs. And we don't want that. Like, we want existing customers to go to the account management team.
Exactly. When we talked about your journey, you mentioned a shift from coding using flows in Salesforce. How significant was transitioning for your team, and what were some of the challenges and benefits of moving to something that was more visually oriented from a process design perspective?
We used to have our lead lifecycle in like custom Apex code in Salesforce, written by one Salesforce engineer, manageable by one Salesforce engineer. And that's exactly why we changed it.
Oh man, what happens when that person leaves, you know?
Well, exactly. And we came to that situation where I think the person was on holiday or something had broken and it wasn't working. And none of us write Apex code. We are much more visual type people. So like workflows and Canvas type things. It just works a lot better for a lot of people. And so it was a little bit less customizable because clearly you're not writing your own custom code. You have to use the flow steps that are available in the workflow builder in Salesforce. But sometimes when you simplify things, it also makes things a lot easier.
Yeah. I think marketing people are much more visual people anyway. So enabling your team to be able to work on that was probably a good thing, having that visual touchstone to work from.
And it allows us to, I mean, I keep going back to the same topic of enablement. Like, it allowed our Marketo experts, for example, to become more knowledgeable in Salesforce. It also allowed our Salesforce engineer to become more knowledgeable in their soft skills of communication and documentation to marketing ops folks. So again, we had to simplify some things, but now our team are more knowledgeable on different tools, on different stacks. And if something does break down, we're much more likely to be able to investigate, debug, and fix it because it's not in custom Apex coding anymore.
Yeah. And that collaboration across departments is really kind of crucial for success. So like, how did you navigate the balance between marketing and sales and your engineering team, you know, to make sure that there was kind of a seamless operation? I imagine like egos get in the way and we want to do it this way. You're doing it the wrong way. I could see a lot of that popping up. How did you get around that?
So much finger pointing, scapegoating. My tool is better than your tool. Ultimately, I mean, I had to find a peer who we became each other's cheerleaders. And mine happened to be that of sales ops. She and I work really well together. We had a mutual understanding and respect for the other person's area of expertise. And once I think we became like the revenue operations and commercial operations team, where we clearly had the same OKRs for marketing ops and sales ops, we had the same OKRs, that made it a lot easier. We are the same team. We are going for the same goals. We're trying to bring in revenue for the same company. There will be times that things are better done in one system over the other one. And it's an ongoing relationship that you have to nurture. And you do have to put your egos aside and say, you know what? I love Marketo. I bleed purple, but I agree. This is better if we do it on your side or we do it your way.
I was going to say the other thing too is like having a psychology background, you're probably able to apply it in that situation.
There's a lot of marketing folks who I know who actually studied psychology. There's a lot you can learn from how people think.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So your career path took you from B2B tech roles in the United States to now being in France, working at a global headquarters for startups there. I mean, I know you have a French degree, but like what prompted the move and how is it working in a different cultural environment? How does that influence your professional approach? I'm sure folks in France probably work a little bit different than folks in the US.
It's really interesting. So originally what prompted the move, I think is the same answer for a lot of expats. It is love.
Okay.
My husband is French. And so we met in the US. And so I ultimately made the move over here to start a family and be with my husband. But being an American expat in France, well, and being an American expat working in a global company also comes with its challenges. There are companies that I've worked for who have been primarily Southern European companies, like Spanish, Portuguese, Italian. Localize is much more of an Eastern European culture. I've worked at Swiss French companies, and there are nuances to how business gets done in every culture, just like in America versus in the UK. And I think that the positive thing that I bring to it is that because I'm an expat, I already live in a different culture. So I'm much more aware that things can get done in different ways and with different tones of voices, and communication is different. Some cultures prefer written communication over voice calls or video calls. And there's actually a great book if there's like notes for the podcast. It's called The Culture Map. I can't remember who the author is off the top of my head, but it's a great business book about working in companies with different cultures and just intercultural communication. And it helps you understand a lot why certain people make decisions in certain ways. For example, the Dutch are much more direct and straightforward. The book also mentions that the Japanese culture are much more indirect. So you just be more aware of that. And I also am very upfront and candid when I work with people on my team of different cultures. I say, this is how I like to work. I ask them, how do you prefer to work? And you use that as a great conversation starter of, you know, I'm a mom with two young kids. I'm okay with just like texting sometimes.
Yeah, it was funny. I can remember I worked at Yammer, which was a predecessor to Slack. So it was kind of the first platform. It was like a corporate Facebook, right? So you could basically have profiles and groups and chat with people. And of course, you know, we were a worldwide company from day one. And I can tell you, we had such a huge takeoff in the Netherlands And we couldn't figure out why. It's like, wow, why is Yammer so popular in the Netherlands? Like, we had such strong growth there. It was just viral and we took off. And it went to the point that you talked about, that the Dutch are very direct people culturally in their workplaces. They look at their organization as being very flat. Like, they have no hesitation from a frontline worker saying something to the CEO. Like, that's welcomed and accepted. Whereas, like, in the United States, you probably wouldn't do that. In Japan, you would definitely not do that, right? There's a respect for the hierarchy. Whereas, as you said, the Dutch work culture is much more flat and direct. Yeah, I'll have to check out that book, The Culture Map. The Culture Map?
Yeah.
Okay, the last question I wanted to say, you know, considering all of your experience, you know, if you have somebody that is looking to get into marketing operations, that's maybe looking to make a career shift, what advice would you give someone that's looking to enter the field? And what skills and mindset do you think are really essential for success?
I always like this question because my answer changes every time someone asks me this question. I would say some of the skills that are super helpful to have today working in marketing operations is agility to learn and flexibility and having an understanding of basic business acumen, because I've noticed that marketing operations nowadays extends beyond just the marketing team. It involves sales, it involves customer success and product and engineering. And I kid you not, I even talk to legal and like finance about things that have to do with marketing.
And security, probably, right? IT. Yeah, we always talk about on the podcast of how you need to really look at revenue operations as owning the customer journey from end to end. And so when you own that customer journey from marketing through sales down to customer success, you touch a lot of things. Like, you do not stay siloed. So it just really opens up opportunity, I think, for someone that's trying to get into that role. If they are siloed, you just start looking to see, you know, where can you jump in on projects and help and learn? And I think that's really great advice. What do you kind of see happening on the marketing operations on the tech side? You know, is there something on the horizon that you see that's out there? Things are kind of changing, AI is coming into play. Like, what are some of the things that you see?
I mean, besides if there were a tool that could do it all, that would be kind of cool. It would also be kind of scary. But I've seen more and more of these marketing automation tools that are relying more on product data, because the original big three are beasts of solutions themselves. They can do a lot, but they can't pull in product usage data.
Product usage data doesn't influence what that marketing platform is doing, how it executes.
Correct. And so being able to integrate product data with your data analytics into a CDP and into your marketing automation tool is becoming more and more critical these days to really market successfully and productively. And so I'm seeing more of this. It's always been about marketing and sales, having that tight-knit relationship, but now it's moving to more marketing and product. And you really have to understand, not only understand the product that you're marketing, but what makes a product a success and what are those aha moments and those critical moments that the product team needs in order to make the product viral and work. And so really, I'm seeing a shift from marketing and sales to marketing and product. So that's why I think my biggest tip is to have a basic understanding of business acumen, because you're not just going into marketing operations to work with marketing folks. You're going to work with sales, you're going to work with product, you're going to work with engineering. You have to understand at a basic how business functions. And ultimately, you're not going into marketing ops just to do marketing ops. You become part of revenue operations.
Yeah, I would even say data science is part of it too, because you could look at that product usage data when you have a successful customer. Okay, great. Here's my successful customer. How did they act 12 months ago? And then what are the things I want to do from a marketing perspective to the prospects that are at that stage to get them to be that close one customer? And modeling that out, there's a lot of data that goes into that. When you start pulling in that product data and then looking at your marketing journey and then making the two execute in a way that gets you to moving your prospects to being customers.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, Chloe, I appreciate having you on the podcast. It was great to talk to you again and look forward to looking into the culture map. I think there's probably a lot of things that resonate with me there. I also worked at a company that was based in Beijing and did a lot of work in China too. So I think there'll probably be some things there that'll resonate for me. So I'll have to take a look at that.
Yes, thank you. It was a pleasure, Duffy. Appreciate it.
The OpStars podcast is brought to you by Lean Data. To find out more about us and our suite of Salesforce native products for marketing, sales, and revenue operations, head to leandata.com and then make sure to search for OpStars in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else that podcasts are found. Make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss on any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at OpStars and Lean Data, thanks for listening.